Greetings and salutations, everyone. Once again, this is AC2GS, and my name is Roy, Romeo Oscar Yankee, and this is the Limark Technical Net. Every Sunday night at 8 p.m., it's been going on since 1982, 38, almost 39 years under the great leadership of Dick, K2RIW, who is unfortunately a silent key, but in his memory, we keep it alive. And so, once again, it's another Sunday night, and it's another 8:01. So, as always, I like to remind everyone that if you cannot reach me through the repeater, which, you know, can sometimes happen, you can reach me through email. So if you need to contact me, if you have a question for the mailbag, we still have that feature. We use it sparingly because people just don't email in often. But if you have any questions, if you have any topics you would like to hear discussed, if you would like to offer me a puzzle that I could then offer to the participants out there, we enjoy these little puzzlers. Or if you want me to tap Paul on the shoulder and ask him to take a look at some space-related situation and make a comment, the email address is mailbag@ac2gs.com. Again, mailbag at, my call sign is alphacharlie2gulfsierra.com. Also, every week I put up a whole bunch of links that I think you'll find interesting. They will stay there for the next year or so. So please, when you have the time, take a look at them. You can get to them by typing into your browser, roy.ac2gs.com, and that'll bring you to my link page. There's a chat available. You can either go to Limark's own website, and they have a link for the chat room, or you can type into your browser, chat.ac2gs.com, as a shortcut. That'll bring you to the chat room. And I try as best I can to stream Limark's W2VL repeater 24/7. That's available on the Internet. You type into your browser technet.ac2gs.com, and that'll bring you the feed for the W2VL repeater. And as always, I want to remind people that Mike, AC2NJI, has a wonderful archive of the technical net. Goes as far back as September of 2006, and that's at his website, amateurradio.tv. So please avail yourself of it. A great deal of wisdom from very, very smart guys who are in this hobby and unfortunately have become silent keys. Let me drop for a sec. Okay, as I usually do, I will give you the my plan of how this evening will go if the repeater allows me to. We will start, as we always start, with questions or topics. I'll ask people to give me their first name and their call sign, and I'll put it down on a list, and we'll start at the top of the list, and we'll work our way down and discuss the questions or topics of interest that they bring to this technical net. Unfortunately, Andy, WA2CDL, has prior engagement and won't be able to join us tonight on the technical net for another episode of Andy's Corner. I hope he's able to come back next Sunday with the next episode. He has a series of presentations on what you go through to logic out broken equipment that he's used for many, many years as a technician who repaired all that equipment. So I look forward to that, and hopefully we will have another episode of that next Sunday night. Around 10:15, give or take, I will call upon Paul, WS2N, for the SpaceNet report. That should take us to approximately 11 p.m., and I'll come back and tie a bow on it and wish you well and call it a episode. So that's my plan. I hope the repeater and the links and all those things will allow me to do that. We'll see. We'll see how the night progresses. We have a lot of free time for questions or topics, so I hope there are people out there who are thinking up interesting things to bring to the TechNet tonight. So, once again, I am AC2GS. My name is Roy, and this is the TechNet. If you have any questions or topics that you would like to have discussed tonight, please give me your first name and your call sign.
82UGU, Wayne.
Ah, very good, Wayne. I'll put you on the list. I don't know if it's a question or you just want to tell us about the times, life and times of your repeater of your radio that's being repaired by Andy, among others. But anyone else want to put their name down on the list tonight for any questions or topics? Please give me your first name and your call sign. Ah, Kay recognized. Okay, you're on the list, Kay. Anyone else want to put their name on the list for tonight for any questions or topics? Please hit that push-to-talk button. Give me your first name and your call sign.
W2VZ, Rich, just listening.
Okay, Rich recognized. Always appreciate Rich being out there. He's full of responses, and I look forward to him having a little bit lively participation tonight on the TechNet. So welcome aboard, Rich. Let's go to you, Wayne, first. What's your question or your topic for tonight?
I'm going to give you some background, since you brought it up, the Kenwood is basically almost done. Andy has determined that another one of the two is bad, and that's how he left off with me. I believe he had to go to the doctor during the week, so that's probably why he's not on tonight. I had an interesting thing happen with, as you know, I made a 49-to-1 un-un, and I ran a 67-foot wire up into the tree, and I had a 15-foot counterpoise. I made three contacts with it, and it had a lot of noise, and I was outside. I was actually explaining what it was to the landscaper, and I realized I had it wired backwards. The 67-foot wire was wired to the ground, and the 15-foot counterpoise was the actual antenna. And I still can't understand how I made three contacts. The furthest one was down in Delaware.
Well, Wayne, you'd be surprised. Sometimes determination is almost as important as the technology that your antenna works on. I often repeat the story of a guy who later went on to become a small antenna manufacturer, but before those days, as an experiment, he took a 100-watt light bulb, put it on a 5-foot wooden fence post, and by dint of inspiration and a lot of sweat, he got a worked all state certificate out of it. So, you know, by no right should a 100 light bulb be a very good antenna. And it wasn't a very good antenna, but, you know, it just got by. And his determination supplied the rest. Dick used to tell a story of an amateur radio operator who apparently had an antenna that made no sense to anyone, including Dick. Basically, it was a piece of wire that was sitting on the ground. And somehow it seemed to radiate out enough that he made contacts, and he used this strange antenna that defied physics. So it only goes to show that sometimes if propagation is on your side, if luck is on your side, you don't really need too much of the laws of physics.
I guess so, Roy. I'm going to have to go with that because, as I said, I made three contacts. I still couldn't figure it out. And my SWRs were flat. I didn't even need to tune. It was very, very bizarre.
Well, the problem with standing wave ratio meters is the way that they calculate the mismatch and the resonance, if you will, is by simply measuring the amplitude going forward and the amplitude going in reverse and doing a little calculation. So if your transmission line has enough loss where it dissipates the reverse reflected power, it'll read a much better standing wave ratio than you really have. I'm not saying that you had an infinite standing wave ratio, but it probably, that was part of the reason why it appeared to be such a good impedance match. And even if it's not resonant, you can still have a non-resonant impedance match system. It just isn't very efficient. But again, if the propagation conditions are ideal, you don't need 100% efficiency or 50% efficiency. People who used to, probably still do, use ham sticks to talk on 80 meters or 160 meters in their car, especially 160 meters is maybe 2% efficient. And yet, if they're in the right place at the right time, they could sit there and have conversations with people. So, you know, it only goes to show. Luck sometimes is more important than anything else.
And Y28.
Yes, Lou.
So on the antenna side of the UNUN, which basically is looking into a transformer, would there really be a sense of a ground side versus a non-ground side? Not on the rig side, but on the antenna side.
Interesting question. I guess it really depends upon the design of the 49-to-1 transformer. You can have a balanced one. This one isn't balanced because it's unbalanced, so it's unbalanced to unbalanced. So there might be some aspects of the wiring that's preferential for the ground and the non-ground. Yeah, Wesley, you have a comment?
Yes, I'd sound to you about ham sticks. For the higher ham bands, ham sticks are quite efficient. At 10 meters with 8-foot ham stick, or 15 meters, quarter wave, 11 feet. So ham stick is about 8 to 11 physical electrical length. It would be 73%, so you said 2%. Are you sure that you did say it right?
WS2X?
Yes, Paul recognized. I'll get to you in a second, Paul. I said 160 meters. I don't think that you're calculating in terms of a quarter wave for a 160 meters. That would be 40 meters. That would be 120 feet. So those things are about 2% efficient. But we'll get back to you, Wesley. Paul, you wanted to say something?
Yes, I doubled with Lou. I wanted to tell you about that antenna you were talking about that was on the ground. Dick used to talk about it all the time. You're right. It was called the Herbie Snake Antenna. Herbie Snake Antenna. Back to you.
Okay, very good. That's the beauty of electronics. I mean, there are a lot of things that sort of defy rational thought, but for some odd reason, they apparently work. And so you have to go along with reality. If you can prove that a 100-watt light bulb on a fence post can do a worked all states, the guy proved it. It must be a real pain in the backside to be able to do that. You got to probably expend a lot of time and a lot of effort and be particularly lucky, but still, nevertheless. So, yeah, Herbie Snake Antenna. That was a great story that I heard many a time on the technical net, and I enjoyed it every time Dick mentioned it. So, Wesley, you want to respond?
I'm looking for the efficiency of 160 meters. I cannot find it yet. I was thinking about shortening with the coil. So as long as you have a length of the wire that is exactly the one that is needed for the resonance for quarter wave, then if it's shortened or it's full length, it doesn't really make a big difference. It makes a big difference with the pattern of the radiation. Interesting.
Well, you know, I used to have this conversation with Dick. It makes a big difference with a lot of things. As you mechanically shorten a quarter-wave monopole, you increase the Q, which then decreases the bandwidth, so you have to retune it more and more as you shorten it more and more. The loading coil itself is a problem as well. It produces some coupling losses. It produces dissipating heat waste in the inductor, and it lowers the whole system lowers its radiation resistance. So whereas it would maybe have about 50 ohms of radiation resistance, it could bring it down to 1 or 2 ohms. Now it becomes incredibly important, the insertion loss of the rest of the system. So whereas if you have something with a radiation resistance of 50 ohms and you have 5 ohms of insertion loss, that's not that much to worry about. But if you have 1 or 2 ohms of radiation resistance and 5 or 6 ohms of insertion loss, there goes most of your signal into waste heat. So you got to pay the laws of physics in this case. You can't get something for nothing. If you're going to mechanically shorten the radiator, you can electronically lengthen it with inductors, but at the price of a high Q, low bandwidth, and more sensitivity to insertion losses and coupling losses.
Excellent answer. I do agree with that. However, I have a problem using the word mechanically shortened. I'm not doing anything mechanically. You have the same length of the wire that is needed. If you then calculate the capacitive reactance and inductive reactance of the coil so it matches the one that is equivalent for the straight wire run, you are definitely having a problem with the impedance match, but that's what the trans matches are for, or antenna tuners are match for. So if you decide to go for the hamstick dipole, then you actually design one for it. Setting up the portable or space-resistant restricted antennas, standalone mobile works are often avoided to the lag of the grounding methods I'm reading right now. So my question is, why do people decide to go for hamstick?
Because it's a heck of a lot more convenient. It's smaller. It's lighter. It requires less mechanical measures to keep it connected to wherever you're doing it, and it doesn't bang into garage doors, doorways, and tree branches and such. But it is it's called a mechanically shortened quarter wave monopole because it is mechanically shortened. It's less than a quarter wave. What you do to get around that is you electronically lengthen it with an inductor. Now, if you take a hamstick with an inductor and a whip and you straighten out the inductor, you are not going to get a quarter wave length of wire. The inductor isn't simply a tightly packed bit of antenna that's hiding the length. It's an actual inductor, and inductance adds additional correction that the same amount of wire stretched out to be a straight wire would not. So So it's called a mechanically shortened, electronically lengthened quarter wave monopole. And again, it's very convenient. You put it on the car, and you don't have to worry about banging into trees or garage doorways and such. And so it's very popular. Some people will take two ham sticks, two monopoles, connect them opposite each other, and set them up as a base-loaded dipole. It will work. It will have the same problems that the monopoles had. It will have a more narrow bandwidth than a full half-wave dipole, and so you'll have to tune it more closely as you change the frequency with an antenna tuner. And it will have problems with losses and coupling losses and lower radiation resistance and less efficiency for a given insertion loss. So, but it'll be much smaller and much easier to hide someplace. So it's a compromise. Most of the antennas that most of us use here are compromise antennas in one way or another. You know, no one that I know has a bunch of towers and an antenna farm with monoband Yagis all over the place.
Actually, I cannot find anything wrong with that. If the explanation is excellent. Anyway, what is the propagation right now on 28 megahertz?
Well, usually I'm on 10 meters at least every Sunday morning. Today was my day off, so I slept late. It has surprisingly not been good. There was one single time I can still remember about 8 months ago where it opened up all over the darn place, and I was talking to Arizona and New Mexico and such. Usually, on a good Sunday, I can talk to Florida and maybe one or two southeast coast states. But the last about 2-3 months, I'm happy with New Jersey, getting very, very little DX on 10 meters myself. A couple of weeks ago, we had a signal come in from Florida for about 5-10 minutes, and then it faded away.
Thank you for that. For information, if somebody is interested, there is a new radio you can go. There is a guy pretty much known. He has 194,000 subscribers. He's ham radio operator. I don't recall his call sign, but the YouTube channel he has is Ham Radio Crash Course. Ham Radio Crash Course. Great guy, and he presented about 6 months ago a new radio. It looks quite different to any radio that was on the market. And the radio name is LAP599TX500. Let me drop. LAB599TX500. So it is 10 watts up to 15 watts for all HF, including 50 megahertz. And it says the RQRP the transceiver. The only thing that they trying to not talk about it, nor the website of a manufacturer or the anybody, including ham radio outlet, is that it says on it made in Russia. Looks absolutely great. Doesn't have antenna tuner. So he was comparing it to aircraft KX2 and aircraft KX3, and there is a ICOM, but I don't recall that ICOM for QRP model number. Maybe you do. Enter here.
Well, I'm familiar with that guy who does the radio crash course. I don't really listen to many of the episodes, but I kind of see it pop up in my algorithm. And I can see Ham Radio Outlet has it out of stock, the LAB599TX500. I don't know. I'm a little dubious of Russian-made radios. I think Sun SDR was a Russian-made radio that I never really read any legitimate reviews. I mean, I read QST, I read Radcom from the Radio Society of Great Britain, and they review a lot of radios, but they don't seem to review Russian radios for some odd reason, so I don't know. I mean, it looks interesting, but I don't know that much. It is a pseudo QRP radio. It's only 10 watts of output. It's HF primarily. It doesn't do VHF or UHF, but it certainly is an interesting device.
All right, Roy, thank you. This is KD2UDU. Thank you for answering my question, Roy. I'm going to be on the side. I think there was somebody else with a question on the list.
Okay. Just a few words, and I'm going to finish the subject. Yes, it is Russian radio. 6 months ago, it was announced as it is going to be released on American market in September. The pre-orders are being taken. The price is $899.95 through HRO. The problem was that many people didn't know how the warranty on it is going to work or repairs, and that would be true HRO. In some other sites, it is much more expensive. It says $1,135, and that's by pile up. So I was looking inside that radio from a number of sources, and I found out it is a Chinese inside PCB, and the enclosure is watertight and is made by CNC. Now, interesting thing is CNC means it is not molded. So it is a very inexpensive, small series. We know that there are sanctions. We know that there is possibly no approval of the FCC on it. You really might know a little bit more about what the regulations are. And to share.
Okay, Wes. Really, this was an outbranch of Wayne's question that got very far away. And you know, I don't want to delay the next person. Kay is the next person with a question or a topic. So we can come back to the Lab 599 if you want after I talk to Kay. How's that?
Yes, we can. I have a few other radios, but let's finish with the guys waiting in order.
W2BZ.
Yes, Rich.
KC2FFA.
Hello, Sue. Hotel Zulu Echo.
Okay, Rich first, FFA second, ZHE third, I guess. So, Rich, what did you want to say?
I just wondered, I'm on my handy talkie now. I just wondered why the signal is so much louder by an order of magnitude of maybe 5 or 6 when the rig is held horizontally rather than vertically. Go ahead.
I would assume, I think we've talked about this, I talked about it with someone else, it's possible that you're reflecting your signal, and as you reflect your signal, the polarization angle can change all over the place. It's only, in direct line of sight where, for the most part, you're going to have a horizontally polarized RF signal be absorbed preferentially to a horizontal receiving antenna. But if you're in an urban environment with a lot of reflections and such, the angle of polarization can rotate all over the place. In long distance, it's a Faraday rotation in the ionosphere. But locally, it's just the simple reflections off of water towers and buildings and all manner of things.
Because it is way, way, way louder when I have it in a horizontal position rather than a vertical position. And that goes against everything that Dick used to say. But I understand what you're talking about with the polarization and the bouncing off of buildings, except I'm in a rural area, and there's not too much bouncing off of stuff. Go ahead.
Well, are you indoors or outdoors?
Indoors.
Okay, so you're bouncing off a lot of things to get outdoors.
I guess so. I think the framing of these buildings has been made with steel rather than wood. So might that cause something like this? Go ahead.
Well, it certainly wouldn't help. So there might be some moderate absorption in vertically polarized RF and some other reflections that change the angle somewhat. So, yeah, it's probably a complication of a lot of separate factors that add up incidentally. You know, if you have an opportunity to try that handy-talkie when you're standing on top of, say, a little hill or something, I think you'll find that it works better vertically oriented than if you rotate it 90 degrees under those circumstances.
I will try that. Definitely will try that, because it's been a mystery since I got it, and maybe that'll solve the mystery. Thanks, Roy.
You're welcome, Rich. Before I move on to the rest of the people, I just want to thank Wayne for participating. I hope we gave him a reasonable answer for his questions, and I hope you come back, Wayne, and tell us the continuing story of your radio. I look forward to you telling me that you made some interesting contacts with that radio as well. So be well, Wayne, and thank you for participating. Next on my list, and I'm a little confused, If the people who threw out their call sign have completely different questions or want to talk about some aspect of something that we talked about before, during, and after Wayne's question. So I'll ask FAA, give me your call sign one more time, please.
Yes, thank you very much for letting me join the net. The name here is Charlie. The call sign is Kilo Charlie 2, Foxtrot Alpha. Can you drop a second? Okay, my question is, in the last 2 years, I'm going to make it short as possible. In the last 2 years, on all the utility poles, they've been putting up these brown cylinders. I believe it's cell phone stuff. I try to take my camera, take Zoom pictures. I get information. I go online. I get nothing. Nothing. But I know one thing. My AM radio is nothing but noise. Now I'm a big Mets fan, so I want to hear the Mets on 880. Can't hear it no more. It's noise. Can't hear 7:10 a.m. Can't hear nothing. Can't hear 10:10 when. Can't hear nothing. Is there any way to block that other than me climbing up the pole and cutting that cable? And if I do cut the cable, can I get a shock? That is my question for the net. KC2. That's it.
Okay, Charlie, that's an interesting one. I don't have any experience with these brown cylinders. I was unaware that cell towers work like that. They tend to, as far as I'm aware, have a lot more technology in them. So it might be some other thing that the utility company has plugged into the system. If it interferes with your signal, you should be able to just contact the utility company. It might be faulty. There are transformers that are faulty that produce a lot of harmonics that can cause a great deal of problems. And the hard part is hunting down the one that's giving people the trouble. A lot of times people will walk around with acoustic devices because when the transformers are faulty, a lot of times they have a hum in them. In the past, people have mentioned people associated with local electric utility companies who are a little bit more sensitive to amateur radio operators and such. So if anyone out there knows anything about the brown cylinders or noise production or whether or not they're cell towers, mini cell towers, I'd love to hear it, please. Yes, please.
Hey, good evening. My name is Bill, WB2QGZ. It's that's an outdoor distributed antenna system. It's a single sector of a cell site. All of the baseband equipment, for lack of a better expression, is located in a central spot. And most of those brown cylinders are, with the exception of 18 sites in Brentwood, which I think might be where FFA is, some of them are actually a baseband all the way out to the pole, and then they're upconverted to RF. Some of them are RF from the central location, modulated up to optical for fiber, and then downconverted coming out. They operate at 1900 and 2100 megahertz. And generally, I have experienced about 700 of them here, close to 800 actually, and I've never seen one spew any AM band. Back to net.
Okay, thank you, Bill. So theoretically, if the one close to him is malfunctioning and spewing a lot of lower frequencies out, is there any place that you could contact? Because I'm sure they don't have a lot of identifying information plastered on the side of their cylinders. So is there any way that you could take a more legal approach to dealing with it than Charlie is theorizing?
Yeah, that's not really a viable option, tampering with it. The cylinder up on top of the pole is normally accompanied by a brown box on the pole further down. And depending on the site, there's either a PSEG feed for it or sometimes a meter. There should be a label on it with a for further information kind of thing. However, I'm good in QRZ, and Charlie can email me.
Okay, very good. Thank you so much, Bill. I was hoping that you were listening out there. You're our cell phone maven. So, Charlie, did you understand what Bill said? And he suggested that he might be able to help you suss out the origin of your trouble. I think you're best to do it legally, because you could get into all kinds of trouble, and inevitably there's a crew out there that's paid to fix things that are broken. So it would just come back as soon as possible. So do you have Bill's call sign that you could look him up in QRZ?
That'd be my first question. What's his call sign so I could contact him? That's number one.
Okay, I believe it is W2QGZ. If I'm wrong, Bill will correct me.
Okay, no correction heard. W2QGZ. That's a tough one to say. I got good input. Good input. Good stuff. All right. So I'm not going to touch it. Like I said, I took pictures. Used my digital camera to close up. All it says is RF. It says RF on it. No company name, no nothing. And none of this happened until that tube went up. And like I said, I'm a big Met fan. I want to hit a Met game. Yeah, I have Sirius radio. I could hear it anyway. But I want to hear it with the Met announcers and stuff. And it's annoying. It's annoying. And I'm a big radio guy. From scanners to ham radio to AM to all of it, you know. It's all fun stuff. Always been. Shortwave radio, which is kind of dead now. There's nothing on shortwave radio anymore. But okay, all good information, all good information. I'm going to contact him. I forgot his name. What's his name? KC2FFA.
2, Quebec Golf Zulu. WB2QGZ. And if it's one of the things that I am somewhat responsible for, they've been up for like 3 years. We haven't really put a whole lot of new ones up recently.
Hopefully everybody's copying me. Yeah. I am in Brentwood. You're correct. And I live around Roberto Clemente Park. I'm like right down the block. And they put it in a parameter because I drove around the block to see where they are. And all in a parameter all around the park. All around the park. And which was another strange thing to me.
Okay, very good. So, Charlie, you contact Bill, WB2QGZ. I double-checked it on QRZ, and that's it for sure. And hopefully he'll be able to help you. This is the best approach, going the legit way.
WS2N.
Yes, Paul.
I'm wondering how Charlie knows it has to do with those cylinders. I wonder if Charlie, if you have a portable radio, have you, you know, walked around with this thing, confirmed it, you know, walked right up to a pole with one of the ham radio on? Or do you just listen through your house radio? I listen both stations that you mentioned as well, 880. But I use a lot of portable radios. But I'm out in Rock Aqua. Of course, I got a good, you know, it's a weak signal, but it's pretty good. It's not too bad. Back to you, Roy.
Okay, good question. Charlie, I assume you have portable radios and you've walked around the area and noticed that the noise is louder as you approach those brown cylinders.
Good question. The first thing I did, I shut all the computers off an hour. I shut off all the lights. I made sure nothing was on in the house. Noise. Okay? Then I went outside with my portable, I don't know if you know who C-Crane is, C-Crane radio, X-Crane radio. Went outside. Aimed the AM for it, at it. Yep, got a little louder, little louder. My car, when I drive by. Bam, noise. In the driveway, not so bad. When I pass by the pole, noise increases.
Okay, makes sense. I thought it was something similar to that. See, Craig, yes, they make very nice radios. I've seen them. I've never purchased one, but they certainly look nice, and the specs read nice.
It's interesting that he said he drove around and you could hear the noise. That's what happens here. If you go up a couple of different one way or another with I wanted a call. I mean, I would lose it. If I lived in one of the houses, it would be. So there's something up in the wires. Back to you.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I mean, things get broken, and hopefully utilities aren't completely blind to other people. And we have people like Bill who can kind of be the in-between guy between the different utility and the cell phone people. And so, Charlie, I don't want to repeat myself, but contact Bill. Try and figure out who's responsible for the brown cylinders that are spewing a lot of dubious RF, and hopefully you'll be able to get them to take it and fix it, and things will be back to normal. And please, if something comes of all this, come by again and tell us how it worked out.
Okay. I thank you, Annette. Thank you very much, Annette. I appreciate all the input. I really do. It's not something I'm going to go crazy about. Like I said, I have Sirius radio, so I can still hear my baseball game crystal clear. But it's just something that, you know, I really lost shortwave. I don't want to lose AM, too. The scan is, like, half dead, you know. So I ain't even got the latest and greatest scanner. At least I can get the police call. That's nice. But there's not much else on there, you know. Like, the Sepultra taxis. They all use cell phones now. Nobody talks on the radio anymore. But anyway, thank you so much for your time. Thank you so much for your help. And nice night. Thanks again, guys. Everybody, have a nice night. KC2, FFA, I'll be clear.
Okay, very good, Charlie. Be well, and thank you for participating tonight. And if you have any other questions down the road, we have a lot of clever people out there listening and participating. So use this utility that we've put together. So have a good night, Charlie. ZHE, I don't want to kind of short shrift Kay because she was in the number two slot and people kind of checked in after her. But I just want to make sure what your call sign is and what your first name is, and then I'll take Kay's question, and then you'll get the next slot. How's that?
All right, Net Control, how you doing? This is Kilo 2, Hotel Zulu Echo, K2HZD. Name is Tom, right across the water. And yeah, I wanted to see if I could propose a question about helping to figure out a type of antenna to use on an HOA problem, you know. So if you guys get a chance, if you can help me out, we'll be standing by and awaiting my turn.
Okay, very good, Tom. Yeah, we'll get to you soon. Okay, AC2LR, what's your question or your topic for tonight? And welcome to the TechNet on the radio.
Thank you. Good evening. This is Kay, call sign AC2LR. Am I coming in okay?
You're coming in fine. Full quieting.
Great. Good evening. I was wondering, with the diverse audience of the TechNet, can anyone recommend to me an excellent quality microwave detector that doesn't break your bank? Thank you. Over.
Okay. Now, when you say a microwave detector, do you have any particular band in mind? Is it for a microwave oven? Or are you interested in a wider range of detection?
As wide a range as possible. With in my office building, everybody is starting to get headaches. And they noticed 5G just kicked in about a week ago. The headaches seem to get worse when people turn on their microwave ovens. So we're just trying to narrow down what's bothering everyone.
Okay, very good. Well, there's a lot of them on the market. A lot of them are available through Amazon. I saw a recent one in the latest edition of my RADCOM from the Radio Society of Great Britain. So they're selling things like this as well over there. Mine is called an electrosmog meter. And it generally gives it depends upon the antenna that you use, what frequency range you're really dealing in. But it has a reasonable range. The trouble with all these things is you get what you pay for the most part. So these things tend to go for, they start for about $100, $150. This one that I have is a little old, so it doesn't have all the bells and whistles that the newer models have that are able to plug in through a USB connection, and you could plot different findings on it and all kinds of interesting things. But you're not going to get anything that's particularly sensitive at the frequencies you want, I think, unless you would go up to about past $100. Yes, Bill.
Good evening. So this evening you have a captive audience. I'm in the car, and I actually have a signal for a change, so I can contribute. You can't offer a whole lot with the meter, really. I mean, NARDA makes an exposure meter. There's a couple of companies that make them, but they're multi-$1,000 devices. But, you know, with regard to 5G, so let's just, without going through the whole definition of everything, let's just lump it into two piles. There is 5G-style modulation, which is like LTE, but a little bit more efficient, about 20% more efficient than LTE, which is in use by a bunch of carriers here at about 600 megahertz and about 2,500 megahertz. And it's been in use for probably at least 2 years. The millimeter wave 5G is a different story. It operates at either 28 or 39 gigahertz. And for example, in my case, I have an in-building system in one location, a retail location, with the millimeter wave node, and that's it. There's really not a lot of that around, and you have to differentiate between the frequency range 1 NR or 5G and the frequency range 2, which is the millimeter wave. And there's very, very little millimeter wave. And in real life, there's virtually no difference to you from being exposed or having a nearby LTE cell site or a 5G cell site in frequency range 1. It's just a different modulation scheme. Back to net.
Okay, thank you very much, Bill. Yeah, these RF meters were primarily, I think, designed for Wi-Fi and such. So they don't really go much farther than 5 gigahertz. And 5G is specced out to as high as 40 gigahertz. Bill, are they actually implementing those real high frequencies yet, or are they kind of holding them for later rollout?
Well, generally, you'll find carriers in places where they want to show off, like retail stores and stuff like that, that have spectrum there, will install nodes in that band. Again, my place has, I have two nodes in one retail sales location in Nassau and Suffolk, and that's it right now. The thing is, you know, we have some of them in the city on the street. I think for all the carriers that have them, you know, we talk about all kinds of things like autonomous cars and remote surgery and all of this other stuff. But I think that it's really going to be last mile wireless internet. In other words, instead of you getting fiber into your building at a crazy cost, if you can suction cup a device to your window and get 2.5 gigabits over the air with some redundancy, because you'll have multiple potential servers, I think it's really going to be that last mile internet to the premises, which is going to be the the first largest adoption, if that makes sense. And that's not really 100% out there yet.
Okay, I mean, to me, when I was reading the literature of what's the big deal about 5G, that was what they really seemed to be boosting a heck of a lot of, that this is going to do away with all these ISPs out there, that they're just going to take over the entire landscape, which is sort of fascinating. And the amount of infrastructure necessary, because these very high-frequency RF signals don't really travel that far. So you need repeaters all over the darn place. It's kind of reminiscent of 10 years ago when people were having a great deal of problem getting a signal, and the companies would offer to sell you a repeater that would plug into your Internet. They would offer your own little cell phone tower in a house. But this is kind of cubed or something. This is going to be an incredible expense. So the companies are probably expecting a heck of a lot of profit out of it.
Yep, I mean, there's a lot to it, right? So the equipment isn't that bad. It's basically a single box that you feed with fiber, you feed baseband into it, and it does all the up conversion and everything. In the box, manufactures its own beams. I think it's eight separate beams out of the box. I mean, range on the street in the outdoors is about half a block in the city. And you can't even really effectively repeat it. There is one place that makes a repeater. You can stick it on the roof and redistribute in your building. But, I mean, in real life, when you start looking at having to beef up backhaul, and things like that, if you're going to be repeating it into a place with a lot of users, you're better off with a separate node. So I think a lot of it's going to be, when it's built, it's going to be separate nodes and no repeaters. But, you know, again, it's kind of like LTE in the early days. We're kind of figuring out, hey, man, how are we even going to do voice on this? Because it's a data-only thing right now. When LTE first came out, there was no voice on it. It was a data-only mode.
Okay, fascinating. You know, technology just keeps on going on. It's sort of amazing to me. And, you know, I don't want to sound like an old coot who remembers the bad old days of modems making terrible noises and getting you 300 baud access to it wasn't even the Internet for the most part. It was basically bulletin board services. So I won't go too far down that lane. But thank you so much, Bill. Kay, I don't know if that helps you out. I would take a look through Amazon. None of them are perfect. None of them are incredibly cheap. The one that I saw pushed a lot in the British amateur radio magazine was something, I think it was called the SPA-500K Spectrum Analyzer, an RF Explorer. It's available on Amazon as well. I haven't used those. Like I said, I have something called an electrosmog meter. It's okay. You know, it's not a professional a piece of equipment. That would cost thousands of dollars, as Bill indicated.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, I was looking for recommendations of devices that people...
Well, Kay, apparently you dropped out of the repeater, unfortunately. I don't know what happened there. If anyone out there has any experience of their own playing around with these little microwave spectrum analyzers and meters, they got sold a lot to people who were a little worried about their exposure to RF from cell towers and microwave ovens and such. So if there's anyone out there with any practical experience with non-commercial grade test equipment that they liked or hated, please hit that push-to-talk button. Oh, well, I guess we have no takers who've played around with these little things. You know, Well, I wish you good luck, Kay. And if you decide on purchasing something, please come back and tell us how it worked out for you. Well, I hope nothing happened to Kay's radio. If you can hear me, Kay, thanks for participating. Please come back again and let us know if...